All right. It's it was turning out to be a rather, I would say, just really intense spiritual day, because there's a lot of things breaking, and it turns out that so many people, like the Truth Radio movement, has oddly become ensnared, ensconced from its beginnings in this sort of Christian identity, Christian fascist, right-wing, intolerant group, to forming radio stations, to becoming Christian patriots, then leaving the Christian off, becoming so-called patriots, then Truth Radio, now completely and utterly taken by the left and the communists, and they're becoming married. And I'm not being harsh. I'm just going to say what it is, and I'm just going to scream it, and I don't care what the any backlash is. You know, there are no colleagues when it comes to the truth. There's the truth, and then there's the lie. And so we have to go against the grain. And sometimes you got to say something. I mean, the oddest bedfellows, right? The KKK with the communists together? Isn't that the does that blow your mind? So that sort of invalidates 99% of the of what you hear is just, really, it's come down to entertainment. There's nothing true about it. Right? This is the Zeph Report on Channel Z. Zeph Daniel, your host. And you could reach us at 877-ZEPHNET, 877-937-4638. That's a toll-free call to you. Or you could write me at ZEPHNET, that's 5 Bisbee Court, B-I-S-B-E-E, 5 Bisbee Court, 109, number 16, Santa Fe, New Mexico, 87508. Now, I'll ask you to hold your calls right now, because what I've got, Greg Hallett, Hitler was a British agent, and he is on the line now, and without further ado, you'll have your chance to talk to Greg if you want to interact with him. It's fascinating material. And so without further ado, let me just bring in Greg Hallett. Hello there.
In
this? How are you? How you doing?
All right.
Well, I've just, well, you heard, if you heard on the air about my observation about Truth Radio, odd bedfellows, eh? The sort of, if you will, the KKK Christian with the communist, leftist.
Fluid.
Yeah. It's, well, but that's what happens. I guess I just, it's a combination I never thought I would see, but it's becoming that way in America, and, you know, God help us. Greg, I was reading your book again. Let me just start with this. Henry Mankow wrote, I want to take a couple of things that Henry said, and I disagree with a couple of things that he said in his review, which is published on Rents.com. And, yeah. He says that you have a lot of circumstantial evidence, but you don't really, but there's a lot of good circumstantial evidence, but you really didn't have the facts. And I would say you, there are certain things you can't do and say. Is that correct, still?
Well, there's certain things that you can never back up with facts, because there's never any record.
Right.
But in a book review, a good book review is 80% positive and 20% negative and backlash, etc. And, you know, that was an 80-20 book review, and, you know, it wasn't a bought book review, which most are. So, you know, I was reasonably happy with it. And,
yes. Well,
he consulted with me on a few things after that, so, you mm-hmm. know, there's a bit of respect there from him. And,
well, Henry,
listed a whole lot of things that the book actually solved, like Hitler's inaction at Dunkirk and not killing or taking to prisoner 335,000 British and allies.
Right. You know, Greg, I'm going to ask Trish to call you right back because the line could be better.
Okay.
If you would, and I'm sorry for the inconvenience, but I'm not getting any volume. This happens on occasion. So, Greg, I'm going to drop you off right here and go ahead and call him right back. But meanwhile, let me read what Henry Mankow said about Greg Hallett and about his book, Hitler Was a British Agent, by Greg Hallett, H-A-L-L-E-T-T. His information's on our website, of course. He says that this is stunning. The biggest improbability of all is that an Austrian tramp, street cleaner, and gay prostitute, talking about Adolf Hitler now, could become the Chancellor of Germany. Hitler joins a long list of obscure blackmailable figures who have been catapulted to world prominence with the aid of an unseen hand. That unseen hand is what Greg Hallett writes about. Now, last time we went through all of this, and I'm still just amazed. Okay, let me try him one more time. Okay, Greg Hallett, how you doing? Okay, we've got you. That's better.
You see, the difficulty is in writing such a big topic is getting it all down in a book that's still readable and light enough for people to hold up.
Well, this book is not light. I mean, if you hit somebody with it in the head, you probably hurt them. It's a big book. It is engrossed. I found myself engrossed in it in several readings, today being no exception. Let me just read one part that jumps out to me on page 297, Operation Winnie the Pooh. It says, Hitler started learning English when he was trained in the British psych ops schools in Tavistock and Ireland, where he lived in Liverpool for 6 months during his frequent visits to London. Not speaking English was a part of his cover as a British double agent, and speaking English and not German while living in Spain was also a part of his cover. It gave him an edge and helped to make the Austrian a trusted German. That is incredible. So, the last time you were here, Greg, you said that Hitler was made from the ground up.
Yep.
His
father was made as well. So, he was born to be made. And his life was set out before he was born. Because his father's father was a Rothschild.
Mm-hmm.
So they had plans for him either as a financial ally or a warring enemy. And Hitler was a warring enemy. He was an illegitimate Rothschild. And there's a lot of them about. And a lot of them have played major roles in history.
So when you say a Rothschild, what do we you mentioned it before. We'll go ahead and explain again how he became, how did he get put on this planet? What was the liaison there?
Well, the liaison, there were three Rothschilds that had sex, if you like, with Maria Anna Schickelgruber, and that resulted in the birth of Adolf Hitler on the 7th of June, 1837. And then he ended up having issue with Adolf Hitler. And Adolf was spotted and trained by the British as an agent, as a double agent, to take over a small German party. And he did that, and then whenever he needed any funding, he got his superiors, who were also double agents, to ring England. And then the finances in England would fund anything and everything that Hitler wanted. He was absolutely a puppet and completely and utterly and totally created.
It begs the question, Greg, does that mean, when you look at the mind-boggling amount of control involved in Hitler, including the sexual control, which we'll get into in a minute, because that's satanic control that...
It is satanic control, yeah.
But it's there with most of these people have to submit to that, or they don't really get put into leadership positions.
They get put in groups like... The Tavistock started... it actually started about 500 years ago when the British took over the Spanish as kings of the sea and took over the Spanish drug trade. And then a whole lot of psychological development happened over the next 500 years, and that was all recorded. And that became Tavistock in Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
And then with the Civil War in Ireland, the Tavistock there closed down, and another branch was opened up in Firenze in Russia in 1920, which MI6 ran. And then the second Baron Rothschild donated the land for the Tavistock in London, and that's now the center of psychological control of the whole world, TV, education, university, movements. So when we call it Tavistock pre-1920, we're just giving it the name that it has now.
Okay, so Tavistock today, as you say, is involved not just in involved with the making of Hitler, but has been involved with the making of, well, who runs Tavistock?
Usually the Baron Rothschild runs it. So it was the second Baron Rothschild until about 1937, and then it was progressively taken over before then by the third Baron Rothschild, who was Victor Rothschild. And Victor Rothschild ended up creating and running the nuclear arms race, and hence the Cold War. And he was the principal thief of intelligence from Britain, and he gave it all to Russia from 1936 to 1963.
Mm-hmm.
He was he's basically the primary owner of the central banking system, and he was giving all of Britain's secret information, including right through the Second World War, to Russia. And he funds Tavistock, and Tavistock is the mind control program for the planet. It is the center of it.
Wow. We all heard that it was a place that had certainly influence, but I don't think anyone's ever made that statement, at least not while I've been listening to radio or television, that it runs the planet of the mind.
Yeah. I'll tell you how definitive it is. If you watch the movie Here, you know, the play Here that became a movie,
mm-hmm.
That's Tavistock. So the whole hippie movement was Tavistock.
I saw a very horrifying...
Beatles were Tavistock, the Rolling Stones were Tavistock, a whole lot of rock and roll bands were Tavistock.
Does that mean that someone like, say, a Paul McCartney or a Mick Jagger went there to a physical...
Yeah, no, they're Tavistock trained. John Lennon went on radio a week before he died and said he had been... The whole Beatles was a Tavistock concept.
Yeah.
And he was about to go on radio the next week and talk about the Tavistock training and what they were told to do. And if you look at the lyrics and the music mm-hmm. that goes with it, music is allows the message to go straight through to the subconscious. And the lyrics are very passive and, you know, fall in love and don't get on with your life kind of lyrics.
Well, it's kind of like falling in love with Satan. I mean, it's definitely give yourself over. You know, relax relax. Let it happen to you.
Yeah, there's definitely a massive, absolutely massive anti-Christian movement that's gone on through both world wars, and especially since the Second World War. Rock and roll's played a huge part in that.
You know, rock and roll to me is basically to the point of it in general is kind of like, well, what the movies or everything that's in pop culture these days. But it's just to lower the, you know, your conscience about certain things to say that, oh, that was the sort of Old Testament, you know, thinking so constricted. You know, why don't you free yourself and have a decent life? Look at all these people waiting to greet you and give you a nice job and money and everything. If you would just give in. If you would just, you like that voice, give in. And if you would do that, then you'd see that you'd be lifted up and you too can be a star. Everybody is a star. Remember that song by Sly and the Family Stone? Everybody is a star. And
yeah.
To me, it's like, sure, but they want a little something from you before they put that little star on you.
Yeah.
And,
it also ties in with the absolutely massive destruction of the family by all of the governments around the world. And the family courts are a principal player in that.
Okay.
Where the child goes with the mother, and then the child grows up fatherless and has all the patterns of fatherlessness,
mm-hmm.
which is crime and early pregnancies and pregnancies without marriage,
mm-hmm.
etc. Lack of education. The whole gamut there, which is... a massive program about destroying society.
Absolutely.
Massive.
Well, they've done a dang good job of it, Greg. I mean,
they've put, you know, all of the planet's resources into it. Basically everything.
Yeah.
And we have a real tax rate is 75%, so, you know. It's pretty hard to break out of it.
Okay, now don't make me wish I was in a bar right now, please. Okay, the next thing it says is this is another interesting observation. Hitler underwent trauma-based mind control programming, and that means they created alters. Okay, and this is done by having the subject witness something horrible, like, you know, the killing of your baby or killing of your loved one, and sexual abuse combined with it, to create these fragments or alter personalities. And we've dealt with that subject a lot here on this program. So was Hitler one of the first, or was this an ongoing thing before Hitler?
This had been going on for 500 years. At least the British record has been going on 500 years. Hmm. And it really culminated in Hitler. Hitler was, their protege. He was a great success for them. He could be a British agent, create war, destroy Germany. Russia had just been destroyed by their previous agent, mm-hmm. trained 5 years before Hitler, and that was Joseph Stalin. He was also a British agent.
Right.
And that Churchill trained Stalin.
Okay. There's these people were all trained and made men in the sense that they were put there by the banking establishment, or by, if you will, by vast powers that had vast resources. And they wouldn't allow they did a brilliant job getting World War II done. Today, and I'm going to draw a parallel here, and it may be an unfortunate parallel for me maybe to say, but I have to say it because I know it's on people's minds. Do you see any connection between Adolf Hitler and the current president of the United States in terms of being made that way?
Oh, well, George W. Bush is definitely made. He's the product of his father, and his father was the head of the CIA, and they're both members of the Skulls. Right?
Correct.
George Herbert Bush joined in 1948, and George W. Bush joined in 1968, and Prescott Bush joined, I think it was in 1917, and then his father joined in 1931.
Mm-hmm.
So they're really involved with the Skulls, and the motto of the Skulls is that our leaders create war. Whenever a war's needed, even if it's not needed, that's what our leaders do.
Ministers of death.
Yeah. The Skulls are heavily linked to the Illuminati and the Freemasons, mm-hmm. and the military-industrial complex and the bankers. They were originally created for the sons of Wall Street bankers.
Yeah, because without war, Wall Street goes down the tubes. You know, without
It sells newspapers.
Yeah, without war, nothing happens on this planet without war, and we're overdue for a war. Well, the people are telling me online here they want to know how to order the book, and but I was going to read more, another section of it.
Go ahead.
Well, this is, first of all, Zeff Daniel, the Zeff Report. You're hearing this on shortwave. Welcome. I gave you the address. We're here every day at this hour. Greg Hallett is an author from New Zealand. Am I correct in that?
That's right.
Christchurch, New Zealand, right?
No, Auckland.
Auckland. Down there. I'll see you down there one of these days. And as soon as my travel agent books it for me, I'll be on that plane, especially after this discussion at where it's leading. But anyway, the book is called Hitler Was a British Agent by Greg Hallett and the Spy Master. We're going to ask him about the Spy Master in a minute. We can't get too specific with that. This line on page 256, Hitler is said to have shot himself through the mouth with a 7.65-millimeter Walther pistol, and Eva is said to have taken poison. Neither were true. The red carpet in Hitler's room hid the blood, and the blood was found of a different type from Hitler and Eva's. So it was a ruse. Of the two Hitler skulls found, one had no bullet wound and the other had a 10.5-millimeter hole, signifying an SS-controlled state-sanctioned killing. Eva had apparently taken poison, but the autopsy showed that she had died of shrapnel wounds. The Eva corpse had been removed from the streets and bled from the breast. This made it a canned meat operation. This is challenging a lot of people's view of what happened.
Wow, you read really well. I was completely engrossed in that.
I'm engrossed in it too, and that's why they want to order the book, because...
I'll tell you what happened. Hitler's escape was planned because he was an elite British agent.
Yes.
So there were 6 body doubles for Hitler shot on top of the bunker, or actually 5 above the bunker in the Chancellery Garden. And there was another one shot in the bunker itself.
Yes.
And there was one Eva shot in the bunker. And when they took the bodies out, the Eva and Adolf bodies out of the fake bodies out of the bunker and buried them in a shell hole and lit fire to them. And then all the bunker staff went back into the bunker and went, oh, God, it's great to get rid of them, and had a huge party. Like, they were smoking and drinking and dancing. And in the time that the staff were out of the bunker watching the Hitler and Eva burnt, the real and MOH left through the back door, through the bunker chancellery passage, and then into the underground system. Took some kayaks along some flooded tunnels that was used as a Red Cross hospital and had been flooded, and the lower gates had been opened and there were thousands of bodies in there that had just floated out. And they went in on the tail end of this with kayaks and got into a WK-202 half-size submarine, which is 36.5 meters long. And then the Russians and British fired flares over the river for their benefit, which lit their way. And they took the submarine under the cover of all the bodies down to Lake Havel and waited there for a day and a half. And then Hannah Reich flew down onto the lake in Junkers Ju-52-3M 14GE, which is a really old-looking plane that was armor-plated with extra armory on it, and landed on the floats on the plane on the lake, and then the submarine came up under the plane. Adolf and Hitler got out into the belly of the plane, and then the plane took off, and it went to... God, I've forgotten the name of the lake. It's 4 in the morning here, sorry about that. They went to Lake Mugglesea.
Have you had your coffee yet?
Yeah, no, I haven't actually. They went to Lake Mugglesea on the northeast side of Berlin and landed there. And they were met by a launch. And on that launch was Ian Fleming and Caroline Saunders.
Okay, you mentioned Ian Fleming. Yes, Ian, you heard Fleming, that right. The author of the... Go ahead.
Yeah. The author of the James Bond series books, and which became the movies, etc.
That's
and
incredible.
Caroline Saunders ended up becoming the head of MI6. So Hitler and Eva got onto the launch, and they had some negotiations. And then Hannah Reich lowered a parcel down from the plane onto the launch. And that was some complete and some partial with bank account numbers and locations of artifacts, etc. And then the 4 of them beached the launch, drove to the shore, which was only a few minutes. And then they got into a a Lysander, a Western Lysander 3A plane, which is a STOL plane, short takeoffs and landings. That was flown by Hugh Verity, and that took off at 5 p.m. on the 2nd of May, 1945. Now, the 2nd of May is, and it's 0205, in your language it's 0502, which is 007.
Wow.
And they took off at 5 p.m., which is 1700 hours, which is 007.
Mm-hmm.
So that was as close to the truth as Ian Fleming could give.
But people just, I think people have a, they just will look at that information, Greg, and their eyes will glaze over and they'll say, you mean Ian Fleming was a British agent and he wrote the James Bond series that became the famous movies with, you know, with all these various, Roger Moore and Sean.
He spent 8 years in between 1945 and 1953, up to the writing of Casino Royale. He spent 8 years as a total alcoholic, getting himself massively in debt. So obviously had some sort of guilt going on. And his banker came and saw him and said, look, you know, the only way you're going to get out of your debt is to write a book.
No, that's right.
So he wrote Casino Royale.
Do you feel, Greg, that because your history is also worthy of writing a book, your just the anecdotes of the places you've been, the people you've seen, the fact that let me give this to the audience. Folks, Greg had really had quite a history himself in that he knew a lot of intelligence agents. I mean, you were in the business kind of, from what I recall, you were an unwitting witness to a lot of things that happened in Europe, correct?
Yeah. I was kind of, around about the time in Berlin and Moscow, the fall of the Berlin Wall.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, you knew a lot of these agents, and these agents who were no longer in business because of the fall of the Soviet Union. And so you came into a lot of, you slowly, this is all first-hand information, folks. It's all from Greg and his experiences in Europe, his experiencing knowing people. The book also says, on the cover, the authorship is also the spy master. Now, the spy master is someone who is an agent, an intelligence agent that Greg knows, who co-authored the book with Greg, providing a lot of information as well, but who remains anonymous at this point. So I guess will remain so. But he knew a lot of these people. He knew firsthand. It's really firsthand information.
Yeah, a lot of it actually comes from unpublished diaries of people in the war that we've managed to access. So we've got absolute firsthand information. We've also got notes from the spymaster that he took interviewing people 30 years ago, 40 years ago.
Okay, so it's, and none of this has been published till now. Now, Greg, do you feel safer now that you published this book? Because the spy master's life, and then you, because you know the spy master, and you were there, you are a part of this trail, this info trail. You probably were not safe earlier on. Is that correct? It says, look.
Yeah, well, I used the. We had a national election here on the 17th of September 2005, and I used the election as cover to publish the book. So I published it on the 15th of September. And that worked really well because there was a lot of pressure on us. And then 2 weeks before the election, it just spontaneously disappeared. And I was getting information stolen out of my car. My car was getting broken into.
Yes.
Just general boilerplating stuff. People coming into the door at 1:30 in the morning and bashing on it. And I live in a sort of pretty isolated place. So.
We know other people who are truth tellers who know inside info, and they've been one fellow has been plagued for about 20 or 30 years. Basically, they come into the house, they plant bugs in there, they listen, they drive by the house, they harass the children, they plant things in the water, a constant, because of the fact that
it's called boilerplating. That's what's called boilerplating.
Okay, boilerplating. And so this has happened to me before as well. And it's funny, when I went online and I came out with all the information about elite Satanism, it went away.
Yeah.
It stopped.
Yeah, well, see, one of the things I mentioned towards the end of the book is that every government in the world is now an occult mafia, and they operate on the principles of the occult mafia and the goals of an occult mafia. And as a mafia, they will they consider themselves above the law,
right?
Which they are, in that they are the law. They are the judiciaries, and they are the political parties, and the governments, and the social services, and the police. So the, and their goals are that no one should have any new information, no one should have any real information, no one should have any effective information, and no one should be able to reveal any secret. So what we've got is this massive media called TV, mm-hmm. and it's crap. It is utter rubbish. It's straight brainwashing what's on TV now. Like, I'm really productive because I no longer watch TV at all. Like, I'll watch a DVD, but I never ever turn it on. I don't even watch the news anymore because it is just such rubbish.
And it's right.
What we've got with Hitler is we've had 60 years of lies on Hitler. And the difficulty, one of the difficulties that people have is when they get told the truth, mm-hmm. they have to let go 50 years of being lied to. And that's pretty hard for most people.
It's very, very difficult. I mean, there's all kinds of plots out there to get you to, you know, to get you to say, oh, you know, I was duped all those years, and don't you feel bad, so you stay in denial. Rather than dealing with the information, I'd say most of the people, say over 40 years old out there, they tend to prefer denial because they just want to get to retirement and then I'll talk, but not until then.
That's why most historians are really old.
Yeah.
And they don't have the energy to write when they do retire. I mean, one of the things I want to mention about Hitler is when he left Lake Muggleton in a Western Lysander 3A, he flew to Spain, and there were extra fuel bladders in the plane to do that, and they were tailed with the Junkers Ju-52 3M14GE flown by Hannah Reich's favourite pilot, and they landed in Barcelona. And this is May the 3rd, early in the morning on May the 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
In April, the month before, Spain had declared itself a safe haven for all war criminals. And in order to hide this, the UN, immediately after the end of the war and the formation of the UN started a safe haven program, which meant something completely different. And it was about transfer of money stolen by the Nazis back to its original source. So when you go on the net, and you should try this, you go on the net and you look up safe haven, and you can't find any information about Spain declaring itself a safe haven for war criminals, but you can find literally thousands of documents from the United Nations declaring safe haven for the return of Nazi gold, etc. So that the cover-up for Hitler's escape out of Berlin goes right through to the UN.
Okay, so you're talking about a satanic cabal that rules the world through a mafia criminality that if you don't conform to that, you not only will you not work, but you'll be oppressed if you've been in the system and then you want to talk, people are afraid of losing their lives, obviously. That's why they don't come forward.
Yeah, a lot of people write under a cover name, etc.
Yeah, they say, I got a family, I got kids in school, I can't do it right now. Yeah, but the problem is if they think you're not really with them, aren't they going to come get you anyway? I mean, if they don't think you're really loyal at any level, you know, anywhere in this...
I'll tell you what the trick is. The trick is to write 10 books and publish one.
And have the others on hand.
Yeah, have the others on hand that come out if you get knocked off or whatever. That's what I've done. I've written 10 books and published one.
Okay, well, here's an example of where Greg has been. He says on his website, which is angelfire.com/trek, T-R-E-K, /spymaster/AUTHHTM. I have it on the site at zefnet.com.
Yeah, great.
And it's right there on the front page today, so you can just click that on. He says, I interviewed the KGB in Moscow in December 8, 1989, at a point when they were open due to lack of pay. At the time, you could buy information for the price of a meal. This led to some psychological information being supplied, which led to international contacts and meeting with a spy master. The spy master and other intelligence operatives have been briefing me for the past 3 years, resulting in 10 books. So Greg has written the 10 books. This is book 5 of 10, and just to confuse you, there are 4 books in this immediate series.
Yeah, there's 4 books in the Hitler series. So I've just been putting together a second one, and I've only used one chapter out of stuff that I've already written, and all the rest of the information is new.
Well,
for the next book.
It's
the information that I got from Moscow was crucial, and that I saw that the Russian people were deconstructed, and I knew about deconstruction from a place back in New Zealand that was doing hippie type mind control, and I'd managed to get in with the therapists there and study all their models. And then I used it against them and interviewed them and found out who had trained them and what they were about. And over the last about 15 years, I've developed several psychological models, and that allowed me to write the psychological profile for Hitler on how he was deconstructed and what his anchors were to operate him on a subconscious level. And then once I developed the model, I leaked it out to one person who was actually a coal miner. And, you know, I just mentioned it to them. And within 6 months, I had a Western scientist from Russia fly out to New Zealand. And we met in a central North Island motel room. And he briefed me on a whole lot of stuff, like how to watch the news and how to interpret the news and a lot of what was going on world affairs, and I found it difficult to believe at the time, but all of it has come true. And he brought with him the KGB equipment used for deconstructing the subconscious. And he had converted it to reconstructing the subconscious. And then he came out to New Zealand, stayed with me for 3 weeks and briefed me. So that was, you know, that was fantastic.
Yeah, but...
It was great.
We've found that this deconstruction, you know, breaking a person down, building them back up. We've had so many people on this show that have come forward with their testimony about being, you know, mind control slaves, sold to the Illuminati at 10 years old for pornography and to service the elite perverts that rule the world. Yep. On and on and on, the same exact story. I don't care where you go in the world, what country you go to, this same just despicable thing. So, Greg, let me ask you this. Is this now coming to the surface? It seems the information's out there, right?
Which the Hitler stuff or the deconstruction?
The Hitler, the deconstruction, the psychological ops, all this.
The whole thing's an arrangement for war, an arrangement for control of the planet like this. It used to be that various royal families controlled the planet, but when the... when the royal families all basically lost their power, except for the British monarchy, which is a puppet monarchy, but it's, you know, it's still sort of prevalent. It was mind control that took over as the control mechanism to keep everyone in their place. So the deconstruction of people as individuals happens on an extreme level, but on a mass level, it happens to everyone. Like through TV, radio, newspapers, work, tax, other people's thinking around you, etc.
So it's really a spiritual. It's really supernatural. I mean, how can you?
Well, it's all encompassing.
How can you? Go ahead.
But you were talking about pedophilia before.
It's just being
politics operates on shame. If you have a politician who has been involved in pedophilia as the extreme example, then, and if you've got film footage of that, you have absolute control over that person. And depending on the degree of shame, you've got varying degrees of control over the person. So one of the things that the Tavistock type schools and people and intelligence agencies try to do is they try to get records of people in the most shameful situations. And if someone is a pedophile and has some intelligence, they'll grab that pedophile and promote them because they have control over them. So what happens is we've got the most sexually bent politicians all around the world. And New Zealand is an absolute extreme case. We've got politicians who are transsexual, actually fake transsexuals. Georgina Beyer is the world's first fake transsexual MP. No sex change there at all. We've got lesbian MPs. We've got MPs on methamphetamine. We've got MPs importing drugs and distributing drugs. We've got homosexual MPs, child sex abuser MPs, pedophile MPs.
So they're all in
the... Chris Carter, the MP Chris Carter for Labour.
Okay, so they're all in...
He just got outed as a pedophile.
Okay, and this is Maine. These are big names in New Zealand.
These are the current members of Parliament acting as the government.
Okay,
they
so
are
it's
former prostitutes, drug users, and pedophiles, and it's documented.
Yeah. Well, we've been the sad story has been coming out more and more and more that for a politician to make it in America, for example, they must do something that they have on film of you. In other words, that you would sell out, and in that way you would have sex with some, whatever it is, you know, usually a sexual thing. And then if they don't have something like that on you where they can blackmail you, not just to keep your mouth shut, but to do the kinds of things they want you to do.
Yep.
So they get that on you, they have that on file, and you're forever controlled the rest of your life.
That's it.
So that's the way that's the way the whole world works. And
that results in an occult mafia.
So if you're a pervert, a pedophile, a drug dealer, a drug addict, an alcoholic, who also has to be a pervert. I mean, everyone's got to be a pervert. In other words, if you're
a fake transsexual.
Okay, all these things qualify you.
That helps. Cross-dressing helps.
Yeah, cross-dressing helps. Any kind of major perversion that the public, if the public saw it, you'd be out of a job. That's the kind of thing they want on you. Plus,
as long as you look good in a suit, you're fine. Now, the police are treated and advanced in exactly the same way.
Mm-hmm.
So the police don't charge them. Like, we've got MPs here who have two charges pending against them for child sex abuse, and the police won't act on it. And we've got our top international politician is a homosexual and a pedophile, and US Customs exposed him as a pedophile, and instead of being withdrawn from politics, he was promoted to the highest New Zealand overseas position.
And I thought it was just like, you know, nice pastoral land down there in New Zealand and nice wholesome people, and I was thinking about going there. Hold on, we've got a caller on the line. Hello. Is this Paul from Dallas?
Yes, it is. Good morning.
Good morning, and we're talking with Greg Hallett, New Zealand, and Hitler was a British agent.
Yeah, I've seen articles on the net about his book and read a lot of reviews. I haven't ordered it yet, but I intend to and read it. And I was fascinated when the show first started, he mentioned that the Tavistock thing goes back 500 years. I didn't know that. And that started connecting a lot of dots for me, and I wondered if Greg could comment on the recent sale of the shipping container thing to the Arabs from P&O, which my research showed that the P&O people in England that were into the shipping containers got their start from the clipper ships that used to be involved in the Oriental drug trading. And then it became a publicly traded company in about 1865, around the time of the Civil War. They were also involved in slave trade shipping to the United States. So it's fascinating to me. I mean, I'm just overwhelmed. But I wondered if he could bring that forward to current times where P&O decided to sell their shipping container business in the United States and around the world to the Arab consortium that, you know, that's recent news that we've been watching.
Mm-hmm. Greg?
I'm kind of aware of it, but I can't say anything constructive. It got mentioned to me today, and it relates to a wealthy family in England that the father had an opportunity to kill Hitler, and he went to MI6 and said, "Here is how I can kill Hitler with a packet of matches with yellow fever in it." And he was told under no circumstances to kill Hitler. Now, that family was related to the drug trade, real estate, shipping. That's all I can say at the moment. So he's on the right track. He's on the right track.
All right.
And it does go back 500 years, and you know, that's about as far as well-recorded history goes. And after that, it becomes quite confusing, because we had a massive date change in history that happened right across Europe over 170 years, where between 1 year and 13 days was added to the time in various countries. So in England, before the year 1700, you actually have to take off a year and 10 days for any part of history. So going back 500 years, it gets really confusing. But what the there's a group called the Tunners Club, and the Tunners Club, it's in the book, they bet on the amount of shipping tonnage lost each year. Now, that dates back to the pirates, when there were competing shipping lines going around the world, which would take the trade winds and the currents. And they would employ, the shipping companies based in London would employ pirates to sabotage each other's ships. And that's about all I can say on it at the moment.
Wow, that's a lot of information. Paul, anything else?
No, that's all. I just wanted to call in and say, hey, I started listening early this morning, and this started connecting to the dots for me, because I researched that thing about P&O and the shipping containers a lot when that story broke last fall.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of got confused where I saw that it went back to 1865, and I couldn't chase it any further back. But when Greg mentioned that this Tavistock thing goes further back than that, that's amazing.
It is amazing.
Yeah, the piracy thing was definitely happening in at least the 1730s.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to let you go.
All right, Paul, thank you so much for the call.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, that is fascinating. I mean, you know, the fact that recorded history goes back 500 years, and a lot of it is fudged, tainted. The information isn't, you know, is, well, you can see just from the what's accepted as the history of Hitler, how far off it is.
I'll give you an example of the confusion in history. The Act of Settlement in England was signed on the 1st of June, 1700, but in the new dating system, it's on the 12th of June, 1701. So anything that happened between the 1st of June 1700 and the 12th of June 1701 is lost to history and confused.
Okay, so
the time dates were changed specifically to confuse history, so that things like the German takeover of the British monarchy went unnoticed. The House of Hanover took over the British monarchy on the 1st of August 1714, and they did it with paperwork.
Okay.
It was a cheat. It was a tactical exercise without troops.
Well, it seems to me that they can go back and plant things in the ancient record. They can have, and they've done that in order to bring about a world view that is safe. That will indict no one.
Yeah, if you read traditional history, it's not that exciting, and it never tells you how things were done, how things were engineered, or what models to look for in the future. But if you write history according to how it happened, then you've got models to look at, you know, so you can predict what's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, you know, to me, it's fascinating. Whenever you have anything like this, is a document. Let me just tell you, folks, it's a big book, like an encyclopedia, with lots of pictures and lots of just amazing. It's really a retelling of it. It's not just about Adolf Hitler. It's about people like Winston Churchill, the big hero. Now, let's just give a couple of minutes to Winston Churchill. Who was he really, Greg?
Winston Churchill.
Yes.
Winston Churchill was an American. His mother was Jenny Jerome, and she was an American Jew. She was the daughter of a Wall Street newspaper man, and he was wrangling in international affairs. And he had three daughters, and he sent them all over to England to marry into nobility or titles. And Churchill could trace himself erroneously back to the Duke of Marlborough. So she married him, and she was, Jenny Jerome was a complete slapper.
Mm-hmm.
She would have sex with anyone who had any status. And when she married Randolph Churchill, and it was a hushed and rushed affair, but these were a couple of the most prominent people in England, and they should have had a marriage ceremony that was, just a fantastic party, just absolutely huge. But it was hushed and rushed, and 7.5 months later, Winston Churchill was born. Now, Randolph Churchill was not Winston Churchill's biological father. He was just his house father. And in exchange for the other person siring Winston Churchill, Randolph Churchill was promoted through politics faster than anyone else in history, and then taken out of politics faster than anyone else in history. And then he died when Winston was quite young. I think he was about 20. Which stopped the two of them being photographed next to each other to see how completely and utterly dissimilar they were.
Oh, yeah.
Randolph Churchill was skinny and small, and, Winston was quite huge.
Yeah, and there's all kinds of stories, but here's one that I've got. I want to bounce this off you. This is from another author that writes a encyclopedic book. It says, Britain's legendary World War II Prime Minister, Sir Winston Churchill, made the V sign famous, V for victory.
Yeah.
That's what people thought. It was the standard for the cigar-smoking, paunchy politician. He flashed the V sign every chance he got, and the news photographers captured hundreds of photographs of Churchill giving that sign. It was generally thought that in doing so, the pugnacious Churchill was signaling confidence in eventual victory over the Nazi foe across the channel. So the sign of the two fingers pointed upward at a V shape became the universally accepted sign for victory, when in actuality it means that means Satan. And let me just go on and say one other thing about him. Churchill. Okay, here you go, Greg. You'll like this. Where did Winston Churchill learn of the satanic powers of the V sign? Few people are aware that Churchill was a Freemason. And then he goes on to say that he was a Druid priest.
Yeah, he was a Druid, yeah.
He was a Druid,
mm-hmm.
and he was a priest in the satanic... What does that mean? Okay, let's just cut to the chase here. Does that mean that Churchill was a pervert as well?
Well, I don't know about that. He was pretty lazy. He used to stay in the bath till 10 in the morning and smoke cigars, and by 1:30 he'd be, onto his second cigar, and he'd sing Clementine in the bath and get up at 2... go out and do a few hours' work. Now in the sort of 8 hours a day that he was awake and moving around, he's supposed to have written 17 volumes of history. Or I don't know, I think it's like 10 volumes of history, massive things, which are the basis of a lot of British history. But they were written by 17 contract writers who were commissioned by Winston Churchill to write on his behalf, and they were sworn to secrecy, and part of the contract was that they were not to have their names on the volumes.
So Hitler also was connected with Churchill. Is that true? I mean...
They were connected, and it'll come out in another book here. They were connected quite deeply. Churchill was very connected to the British royal family.
So while... While Churchill is giving words of advice to the Brits on how to weather these bombs, a lot of Americans...
Well, a lot of them were made in England. A lot of the bombs that Hitler dropped on London in the Blitz were actually made in Lichfield. in England in 1938.
Unbelievable.
And then the ones that hadn't exploded, they were incendiary bombs, which meant that when they dropped, they would catch fire and you know, burn a whole lot of stuff. So the ones that hadn't exploded, the fire brigade, you know, noticed and they would have to decommission them. And then MI6 would come along and say, not a word of this to anyone, because they could see that they were made in England.
That is incredible.
Because, see, the British Royal Family is German.
That, yes, a lot of conspiracy.
The British Royal Family are the principal double agents in England.
Okay.
And they run wars for profit because they've got shares in the bank.
So they bomb their own people. Churchill is out there hanging around with Hitler, and he's saying, you know, there's all these aphorisms and magnificent statements designed to keep the British people going through extreme adversity. He seems to have no remorse. No one has any remorse. The people of England get bombed, and nothing to be done about it, I guess, except for people like you to bring out the accurate history.
Yeah. Patriotism was something that was developed like a phase, like an era.
Mm.
And it's based around the family, if you like. You know, if you've got a family intact, you'll protect them, you'll protect your family and your home and therefore your country. But what we've got now is the war of ideologies. So we've got we've also got the destruction of the family, which means that we've had the destruction of patriotism. So it's pretty hard now to get people to be patriotic when they've got 75% tax rate, their families are being taken away from them. And, you know, we're living in semi-police states with sexually bent politicians.
Yeah,
who have absolute right. control of the media. And the media is, you know, the public arm for the military. And mm-hmm. absolutely anything that the military wants to have put in the newspapers, the media will put on the front page. And they do this virtually every day. You know, every day we get images of war, you know, right through since newspapers have been, well, you know, since 1900.
Well, now it's terror we get.
Yeah, but the terror is self-created.
Right, it's part of our patriotism. In other words, you stand with the government against the evil terrorists. Greg, we're right at the end of the hour. If you want to write Greg, it's FNZ Inc., P.O. Box 109-624, Newmarket, New Zealand, right?
Cheers.
Okay, Greg, hang on there, and I'm going to wind up the show now. Okay, hey, I don't know about you, but I'm overwhelmed. It's all coming together, all the facts, everything you need to know about what's going on with the world system, and all of that is been exposed here on Channel Z. This is Zeph Daniel, your host, and we're thrilled to have Greg Hallett with us, and we're thrilled to have you with us.